You're listening to the Whole Hog Football Podcast, sponsored by Bud Anderson Home Services, bringing you the latest news, position analysis, and more. Here's your hosts, Matt Jones and Scotty Bordelon.
One month into the season, Arkansas is the story of college football, I think. The Razorbacks have gone from unranked to ranked in the top 10, number 8 in the AP poll, in just 3 weeks. They weren't ranked on September the 11th when they played Texas, and it's been a really rapid climb through the AP top 25. They'll be number 8 for a big game this weekend against Georgia. College game day is coming to town for that game in Athens. I mean, who could have predicted where we are right now just a few short weeks ago? It's been really amazing what the Razorbacks have done. Their most recent win, 20-10 over Texas A&M in Arlington, snapping a 9-game losing streak against the Aggies. Matt Jones joined today by Clay Henry of Hogs Illustrated, Scotty Bordelon of WholeHogSports.com. And Clay, I mean, how do you even describe what's happening right now in Razorback football? Because I don't think this is anything people could have predicted not too long ago.
Yeah, I can remember kind of going through over the last 10 years when Arkansas was in the abyss. And let's don't kid ourselves. They were in a free fall that you could not see the bottom. And people would ask me, is it, it's never going to turn around. It can't turn around. And I said, no, you just got to get the right coach and or coaches. And that's what's happened. You've got the right coach, the right coaches. It's a good staff. You know, it's, the same thing has happened in every other sport on the Hill. I mean, you just look across and it's, whether it's, you know, Courtney Dyfel or, you know, any Kobe Hale or Dave Van Horn or any coach you want to mention, it's about the leadership, and leadership takes on a lot of different forms. And maybe people didn't see this one coming because Sam Pittman hadn't been leader of a program, but you know, he coached the position with the most players, offensive line, where you have 15 to 20 players counting walk-ons. And his unit and his group, they always talked about his leadership. It's still remarkable, and it still is going to stun a lot of people around the country because he was an offensive line coach. But to say it, you know, was improbable is probably accurate. To say that it was impossible to get here would be not looking at history.
I went on the radio a couple of times last week, once in Portland, I think last Tuesday, and then on Saturday I was driving down to Arlington and I was on in Atlanta, and both times I got a question about, you know, what's kind of the feeling, you know, with Sam Pittman. And both times I said, you know, at the time it was 13 games ago, Arkansas was literally at a low point. I mean, like Clay said, Arkansas football was in an abyss, and I don't think a lot of people had just a great deal of confidence that whoever the next hire was going to be was going to be able to pull them out of it. Like, you were that far into it, couldn't see a light at the end of the tunnel. But Sam has, you know, in the span of 14 games, brought Arkansas from that point to a point that, you know, Arkansas hasn't experienced in a decade, really, since Bobby Petrino's last year. It's pretty remarkable. And I just think the leadership from a coaching staff perspective is remarkable. And I think the players too deserve a lot of credit, not only for buying in wholeheartedly, but I think they hold one another accountable. And you've got a really good group of super seniors and captains that, you know, keep everybody in line and on the same page and keeping everybody mission-minded.
I don't think what Arkansas did against A&M was a surprise to any of us. We all picked the Razorbacks to win that game. I think I was a little bit surprised by just how dominant they were in the first half of that game, though. And, you know, you wonder if KJ Jefferson doesn't get hurt in the third quarter, if they end up winning that game by, you know, a much larger margin. It really, in the second half, became Arkansas's defense just holding down A&M's offense. And then, of course, Arkansas wasn't able to get a whole lot offensively going. They did get the interception in the fourth quarter that led to a field goal. But it felt like Arkansas was in control that entire game. I was talking to somebody the other day. They said, I knew they were going to win after the second or third series. Of course, you know, at that point, it's what, 17-0. And so it's not too hard to, you know, to see where things are going. But that really surprised me that, Clay, that they were able to hold A&M down as well as they did. And you know, you look at this defense now, this is three straight games where they've held the opposing offense to under 300 yards.
You're right, Matt. And thing that was really telling, there was a point where you thought, okay, here it goes again, because A&M has mounted these comebacks against Arkansas, and the Spiller run where he's untouched for 67 yards is noteworthy, because you knew that momentum had switched to the other sideline, but that Arkansas defense just kept playing. And this is a stat that I can never remember in what I would call, you know, a top 20 matchup. Texas A&M did not snap the ball in the Arkansas red zone. I've never seen that in a game. So that tells you the dominance of the Arkansas defense, the Arkansas front. When you look out there and you see John Ridgeway just toying with centers, I mean, he's throwing them around. I thought he, you know, early in the season, I watched him, I was like, he plays way too high, he stands up. But he generally just blasts the center, stands them up, and then throws them. And if there's not another man to give leverage, it's going to be a bad problem for the quarterback. And it starts from there and just spreads throughout the defense. And it's an incredible thing to watch. And they have literally a chance against any offense because of the way their defensive line, those three men, Ridgeway, Williams, Utsi, and then they're able to sub. It is an unbelievable thing to have as a head coach, a defensive line that controls tempo and no mistakes in the kicking game, no turnovers. Hard to lose.
Scotty, you wrote about Trey Williams after the game and just how he dominated. I mean, you and I were sitting next to each other in the press box, and I think it was about two series in. I said, this left tackle can't handle him, and he never could. And I think they even tried other left tackles. Nobody could get a stop on Trey Williams. He was dominant on the first possession of the game. And then, of course, the Aggies' last offensive play, he made the play that, you know, basically sealed it for the Razorbacks.
Yeah, I'm not sure that dominant even does it justice. I mean, he like Ridgeway toys with centers. That's what Trey Williams did with the left side of that A&M offensive line and whichever left tackle was in the game, whether it was the starter or the back. It was, I think, the starting left tackle was a little bit banged up. He forced three holding penalties in the game, and then you can get into, he also had four tackles, and he also three quarterback hurries, two sacks. I mean, that's a performance that, you know, years down the line, when if Arkansas and A&M continue playing on an annual basis, that's going to be a performance that people remember for a long time. He was so dominant. And what you're seeing right now is Trey Williams healthy. I mean, you see the big arm brace he's got on. Sam Pittman said he's been dealing with some bicep problems. And then I think he's had, I think, a little bit of back trouble. And at one point in the game, I think he just kind of fell down because I think he felt like a little pull in his hamstring. Then a couple of plays later, he absolutely folds a fullback on a run play, blows the play up, lets John Ridgeway eat the running back. And then the very next play, Trey Williams comes off the edge, gets really low on the tackle, gets by him, draws a flag, and then he gets by the left guard for a sack. It was an unbelievable sequence. And he graded out at 85 on Pro Football Focus. I was surprised it wasn't in the 90s. He was phenomenal. And I think he's really starting to heat up, as he's got 3.5 sacks in his last two games. So going into a game like Georgia, you're going to have a guy like that, you know, trying to create as many problems as possible.
It's interesting that Sam Pittman said that, you know, this is what he expected from Trey Williams. You mentioned the three holding penalties, by the way. He also forced a false start on that left tackle early in the game against Texas A&M. And, you know, he knew he was in his head, because when he forced the false start, Williams kind of went up and just kind of tapped him on the head. And he was talking to him. You could tell the tackle didn't like what he was saying. But Pittman mentioned that he was like this whenever he was at Georgia, that he had a couple of first round tackles who struggled with him, you know, with the Bulldogs. And of course there's been, you know, a cycle of new linemen who have come in at Georgia, Clay, but you know, Williams, he knows this Georgia defensive or offensive line. Of course, you know, they know him. That's kind of an interesting dynamic going into this weekend.
Yeah, I think you're going to see teams start to scheme and game plan for Trey Williams, and that you're going to see multiple tight ends. They're going to do what Arkansas did a few years ago when A&M really had those great defensive ends. Is that you can do things to negate a player, but it takes away your offense. You're going to take out, you know, playmakers. You're going to take out wide receivers, and you can't just put one tight end in there. You've got to play them on both sides. It's a concession that you're trying to get as a defensive coordinator where, all right, we've pinned you down now. We know what you're going to do. You're going to run it because you can't throw out of that formation. So it's he is a real weapon, and it's the difference in what we said Arkansas had to do to take the next level. They had to get a pass rush. That was the one thing, and to pass rush in a three down set and to be meaningful pressure is huge.
Trey has really lived up to the hype, because in the preseason, right, or when Arkansas got him committed, you know, the kind of the consensus was he can be an edge rusher that Arkansas has been missing for years. Sometimes when Arkansas gets a player like that, maybe a transfer or, you know, maybe an incoming freshman, sometimes that doesn't always pan out, but he has lived up to the hype, and he's got the eighth best pass rush grade, according to Pro Football Focus, among edge defenders in the SEC. And yesterday I went back and looked through the box scores of when Trey Williams played against Sam Pittman's offensive line. In 2019, Trey Williams had four tackles. And then in 2018, he had one. 2017, he had three. So he's a problem. Looking forward to, so I'm talking to Trey Williams' mom for a story for later in this week on Trey. So I'm excited about that. Try to get to know him a little bit better, but he is, like Sam Pittman said, and Jimbo Fisher said, he's a major problem.
One of the concerns for Arkansas going into the A&M game was whether or not Ricky Stromberg and Dalton Wagner would play. They both ended up playing. They played the entire game. In fact, we were talking about this afterward. I don't think they switched their offensive linemen at all during the game. I don't remember seeing Ty Clary in the game on Saturday. So they went with the same five, and it's the first time that they've done that all year. Now, you know, different circumstances have warranted some switching, but I think, you know, to this point in the season, we expected them to switch Limmer and Clary at that right guard, you know, at different points in the game. I don't remember them doing that against A&M. And this A&M defense came in, I think they had seven straight shutout quarters. They had been really good against the run this year. And if you take away the two kneel downs that Arkansas had, I think they had a kneel down at the end of the first half and then, of course, a kneel at the end of the game, they averaged 4.3 yards per carry against a really, what we think is a really good Texas A&M defensive front. You know, we talked about this last week. The offensive line looks good, but they haven't really faced a real physical defensive line yet. They did against A&M. They're going to again this week in Athens. Clay, it seemed like they held up really, really well in that game.
Yeah, I think that what you saw is a scheme where the best way to attack a great defense is straight at them. And they ran at end and tackle more than I've seen them be able to do against a good defense. And Traylon Smith, you know, he hit them so quick. And you don't have to dominate a defensive tackle. You just need to wall them for a second, you know, engage, put a hat on a hat, not turn anybody loose. And, you know, they were able to hit gaps and really impact the scheme Texas A&M. After that first series, you saw Texas A&M start to creep their safety up. And, well, when you do that, then you've got Burks. So a little bit of a running game really helps the deep passing. And, boy, do they have a quarterback that can hit the deep pass.
They had six players on Saturday who had a run of at least 12 yards. That's incredible to me. Traylon Smith had a 19-yard run. KJ Jefferson had a 19-yard run. Had more than, you know, or he had multiple double-digit yardage runs. Rocket Sanders went for 12. Dominic Johnson went for 16. Traylon Burks went for 14. Hornsby came in the first play that he was in the game. He had that 16-yard run. Just, Scotty, you never know where it's going to come from with this running game, but it seems like there's always options there.
Yeah, there are plenty of options, and it's crazy. You know, KJ had a nice run, about 18 or 19 yards. And then I thought it was really big on that first series, like Clay mentioned. Arkansas just kind of hit Texas A&M in the nose with the run. And I think Traylon Smith's first three runs went for 16, 15, and 12 yards. And one of those runs was brought maybe halfway back because of Traylon Burks' holding penalty down the field. And so that, you know, that's a little bit demoralizing right off the bat. You know, Rocket Sanders, I don't think, played as much as maybe some of us expected, especially when Malik Hornsby was in the game, because Sam Pittman said that, you know, Hornsby and Rocket have had, you know, a little bit of issues with the handoff. And I think we saw that in the game, right? Was that when Hornsby fumbled and there was like a mass pileup, you know, about 10 yards downfield? But even like AJ Green ran the ball okay, but you see the talent that kid's got. That right before he even broke the last couple of tackles on his touchdown catch, the spin move to get by the first defender is special. And then Dominic Johnson, who's your number four, who's been really good, your leading one of your leading guys in terms of touchdowns first few weeks, he doesn't get in until late third quarter, fourth quarter, and then he helps you, you know, put the game away at the end. I mean, they've got a wealth of talent in that backfield, and it's pretty fun. I don't envy Sam Pittman and Kendall Browse trying to figure out who's going to get touches.
Go back to the AJ Green touchdown pass. So that play started out, they set him at flanker, and linebacker edged out and then moved him back inside, and the linebacker came in. That identified man-to-man, and KJ went to him, boom. And it's a tough matchup because that linebacker, he's got to sit inside with KJ and AJ both in the backfield because KJ will run it off tackle if that linebacker cheats a little bit and he can't run. There's not many linebackers that are going to be able to run on that swing pass to keep up. We'll see if Georgia can, but that's been a play that's been there all season, is the swing pass. If you got a linebacker that's just, I mean, if he's not 4-4, he cannot run with AJ in that swing pass to the flat, and you're playing man-to-man outside, the wide receivers vacate, and all at once you got a real problem. Like you say with Trey Williams, AJ is a matchup nightmare at running back.
I thought an underrated part of that play too is Trey Knox in the slot. He set a pick on that linebacker without touching him and freed up just enough space for AJ to be able to catch that pass clean in the flat.
The Whole Hog Football Podcast is brought to you by Bud Anderson Home Services. Visit them online at gocallbud.com.
Bud Anderson is proud to be the official heating and cooling provider for the Arkansas Razorbacks. This partnership will support all Razorback athletics for over 400 student athletes across 19 sports. Whoopee!
WholeHogSports.com has the largest, most experienced staff of reporters covering sports in Arkansas. Football, basketball, baseball, recruiting, and more. You'll find it at WholeHogSports.com. The website includes up-to-minute news, daily commentaries, and award-winning photography from the staffs of Hogs Illustrated and the Democrat Gazette. For subscriptions, call 1-800-757-6277. That's 1-800-757-6277. Or visit us online today. WholeHogSports.com.
Want more coverage of your home team? Download the Whole Hog Sports Video On Demand app. Check out the Fan Zone and get up-to-the-minute videos, podcasts, and features on football, basketball, baseball, recruiting, and more. Search for Whole Hog Sports on Apple TV, Roku, and Amazon Fire at home. And take it with you on the go by downloading it for your mobile device in your app store. The Whole Hog Sports Video On Demand app. Get it today.
Welcome back to the Whole Hog Football Podcast.
Clay, you and I remember real well when College Game Day came to Fayetteville in 2006 for the Tennessee game. Scotty, I think you might have still been playing like middle school basketball at that time.
Probably in junior high.
It was a big deal, and it was it built throughout the week. It was first time they'd ever been in Fayetteville, the only time they've ever been in Fayetteville. This will just be the second time that Arkansas's played in a game day game. Obviously, it'll be the first time on the road. It's a little bit different feeling because of that. And then you add in the distance to Georgia. It's not like they're playing a game day game in Arlington or Oxford or Columbia, you know, a place that's a little bit more nearby where a lot of people are going to be able to go to in terms of, you know, the visiting fans. But what do you think about game day being there Saturday and just everything that comes into that? Because you've got more media requests that are going to be a part of that. Of course, you know, the players know that there are going to be a lot of eyes on the game because of that, not just because of game day, but because of the rankings as well. This seems, though, like a really neat deal for the Arkansas program to be able to be featured like they're going to be on Saturday.
Yeah, I think what it is it's as much for the players. I mean, I think they're kind of oblivious of all of that because they're already in their routine when game day is going on. It's hard for them to see any of that. They're probably already on the bus headed to the stadium when that's going on. But it is a huge thing for Arkansas fans to now be relevant again. And it's been so long where Arkansas is not on the bottom scroll or whatever you want to call that, the crawl across the bottom of the screen. You know, that Arkansas upsetting number 8, Texas A&M, Arkansas knocking off number 15, Texas, that going across the screen a whole day and a whole night all across the nation. I mean, that to me, you're in the New York Times, you're in the Washington Post, you're in the LA Times. When you're knocking off ranked teams, it changes things. You know, I talked to a couple of my buddies from Colorado, and, you know, they do business with Aggies. They called all those guys the last 2 days. Hey, I just wanted to check in with you. Oh, by the way, about those Razorbacks. And that's what's going on right now all across the country. Wherever there's a Razorback, he's got his chest out. He's wearing his gear. And game day is the same kind of a deal. Now, I think it's old hat for the people in Athens. They're used to it. I don't know how many they've had, but it's probably
their 27th.
Yeah, it's whatever the number is. I don't know. But it's – and I don't think with a noon start Eastern time, it really does that much to liven the atmosphere. And, you know, those folks, it's a different deal when you have game day in the morning and it leads to a 2:30 or a 6 o'clock kickoff than it does, that early game. But it's fun and it's great for recruiting. I mean, it just elevates your program to be in the national spotlight like this.
Matt had a good tweet the other day. I think it may have been Sunday where he said, you know, Arkansas in the span of like a year and a half has gone from Ryan McGee's bottom 10 on ESPN.com into the top 10 of the AP poll. I mean, that tells you Arkansas has gone from one end of the spectrum to the other. And, you know, in terms of playing on, you know, game day being at your game, it's like Sam Pittman said before the Texas A&M game. He's like, you can be in New York City, you can be in Los Angeles. You turn on ESPN, you're going to see the Arkansas logo. And I think Sam and his staff have, you know, captured this moment with recruits and sold it to them. I mean, you come play for us. This is what you can be in for, because this is what we are now. And everything's about recruiting, right? Like you've got a lot of talented guys on your roster right now that helped you get to this point. At a certain point, they're not going to be on your campus anymore, and you got to get more dudes. And so selling that logo as best you can, that's the way to do it.
This will be Georgia's 27th time to play on a College game day game. Kind of interesting. It'll only be the sixth time, though, that they've hosted one in Athens. It's either been road games or they played in a lot of neutral site games, whether it be SEC championship, national championship, the cocktail party against Florida. They played in a lot of neutral games where game day has been a part of that. Sam Pittman's talking about all the added, you know, media requests that he's received. I think the one, Scotty, that he was the happiest to be part of was CMT.
Yeah, I didn't even know he did that. But yeah, that's right up his alley. Yeah, he's done. Gosh, he did the College Game Day interview, and I know he's. And I mean, I remember there was a story in the Washington Post on him. I mean, and he's gone on, I think, Barstool Sports, number one podcast on their network, which is just, it's pretty unbelievable. You look at the profile picture on that podcast Twitter account, and Sam Pittman's right there, and you see the Arkansas logo on his shirt. Yeah, he's doing these interviews, but not to a point where it's affecting preparation time or his kids' preparation time. Like he's mentioned both times he's been asked about all this, you know, kind of new media exposure that, you know, it's, they've had to turn some people down just because it doesn't, you know, fit into the time frame that they kind of set aside for this stuff each week. But he's definitely enjoying it.
And it's predominantly Pittman doing the interviews, not the players or the assistant coaches.
Yeah, and that's the good part about it is he's not coaching a position like, say, Nick Saban does. You know, I mean, Nick coaches the cornerbacks. And so Sam is he's a CEO, and he is one of the things that he said right off the bat is he'd handle all the interview stuff. He would keep that off his players and coaches. His coaches do not do interviews during the season, as we know, we've asked for them. But he says anything that would keep them away from preparation or recruiting, he doesn't want. So I think it's part of his plan.
We touched on this last week, the A&M series in Arlington. Hunter Yurecek on Monday was at the Little Rock Touchdown Club, and he was asked about that series and the future of it. And I thought he gave a really interesting statement, and it was that they don't expect the game in Arlington to be on an annual basis after 2024, almost like he was leaving the door open for potentially there being some sort of flex schedule where it'd be in Fayetteville and then in College Station and then back in Arlington. He said that, and I think this is all very preliminary, but that there might be an instance where they play on campus for 4 years and then they go back to Arlington every fifth year. So I don't know that we're going to be closing the door completely on Arlington. But what I wanted to mention was that I think a lot of people, when they see that this game is played in Dallas, obviously much closer to A&M's campus than to Arkansas's, not a whole lot closer, but it is closer. They assume that, you know, okay, it's a neutral site, but that's really an A&M home game. You guys were there on Saturday. That was not an A&M home game. Sitting up top, you could tell that the seats were split. It looked like a 50-50 split in the crowd. It's not the doubt, you know, it's not the Cotton Bowl matchup between OU and Texas where they sell that thing out every year. It's not the cocktail party between Florida and Georgia where they do the same thing in Jacksonville. Attendance has been slipping for this game over the last several years. But I thought it was really interesting to see Arkansas's fans kind of, you know, make a comeback down there. In the last few years, we haven't seen them come out as much for this game. And it just goes to show you that there's a lot of support there when there's excitement about the team.
I always say you can tell if it's a neutral game if you close your eyes and just listen to the crowd and you're not sure which team made the play, then it's a neutral site. You know, if you close your eyes and it's always, you know, Texas A&M cheers that you hear the most, then you know it's not, you know, that it's not neutral. But I could literally not tell by the crowd roar what was happening on the field. Not that I closed my eyes much, but I did listen.
Arkansas obviously preparing for Georgia this week. Scotty, I thought it was interesting listening to Sam Pittman talk about the preparation that they've got planned for the week, one of which was to get the players inside. They're going to practice indoors this week. He said that it's going to be hot. You know, of course, we're having, I think I've heard people call this the, you know, the second summer in Fayetteville, you know, where summer kind of, you know, makes a little bit of a comeback after we've had a little bit of cool weather. But it's going to be hot this week. He said that he doesn't want them out in the sun. He said it's hot inside the indoor facility. They don't have air conditioning in there, but they'll open up those doors. They'll get the fans swirling. They'll get some ventilation going, and they're going to practice indoors this week just to try to, you know, keep the players a little bit more fresh heading into this game.
Yeah, somebody please get Sam Pittman an AC inside Walker Pavilion. I think that would be nice. Instead of you're just setting up the big, I don't even know what you call them. They're just big round fans, and then you've got the kind of like the helicopter propeller type fans up top. That's all that's keeping those guys cool, other than, you know, kind of opening the doors on the sides and the ends. But, you know, it's going to be, you know, Georgia heat is not anything to play around with. It's good. I think that they're getting that. I think the kickoff is at 11 as opposed to, you know, middle of the afternoon. But at the same time, you're still going to be playing in that afternoon heat for a little while. I'm eager to just see how this game plays out. I do expect Arkansas to compete better than some of the teams that Georgia has played to this point in the season. I think we've found out that Clemson is not the team that we thought they were early in the year. But one thing that is consistent with Georgia is that defense. They are mean and they run to the ball and they're physical and they've got some extraterrestrials on their defensive line that they're going to make it, you know, pretty difficult on Arkansas. But I think this team's going to be very well prepared, and Sam knows what he's getting into, and he's going to relay that message to his guys. And I think they'll be ready to go. They'll have a good week of prep, no doubt.
Back in the old days, we used to wait around on practice in the waiting room in the indoor facility. And I remember the bowl practices. Not only do they not have air conditioning, they don't have heat in that building. And that's when you really feel it, Clay.
Yeah. Sometimes, Scotty, look up at those fans and see if you can figure out what the name of them is. It might startle you. It's a word we can't use on this podcast. It's a big blank fan is what they're called. And they are big. And I looked at the forecast for Athens, and high Saturday is 81. So they caught a break there. And it probably won't be, it'll be in the 70s for a kickoff, moving maybe to 81 by the end of the game. So that I've been to Athens when it's nasty and humid, but it's they're going to catch a break. If they can manage to get through the week of practice without too many dehydrations, they'll be fine for Saturday.
Check WholeHogSports.com throughout the week. We'll have plenty more leading up to the Razorbacks game against Georgia. We'll be back with another podcast later this week to go a little bit more in depth on that matchup between the number 8 Razorbacks and the number 2 Bulldogs. For Clay Henry and Scotty Bordelon, I'm Matt Jones. Thanks for joining us.
The proceeding has been a production of WholeHogSports.com. Look for our latest podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or your favorite podcast store. And visit us anytime at WholeHogSports.com for the latest news and commentary.